Let's get a look at how resources might flow if the opioid crisis is declared a national emergency. From Marketplace in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. President Trump said yesterday his administration is preparing to declare the epidemic of opioid abuse a national emergency. These are highly addictive prescription painkillers, either overused by addicted patients or grabbed by others in the family. For instance, one Ohio town has threatened to stop sending ambulances to repeat overdose cases because the money's running out. Andrew Kolodny is co-director of the Opioid Policy Research Collaborative at Brandeis University. Dr. Kolodny, good morning to you.
Good morning.
So if this opioid crisis becomes a national emergency, as President Trump intends, do you have an early sense of how money would flow differently?
Declaring a national emergency does make it easier to seek emergency funding. It also gives the president and the administration the ability to tackle the problem in ways they might not be able to otherwise. So this is much more than a symbolic gesture. If they put together a good plan, it means that federal agencies that have a piece of this problem to tackle can immediately get more staff. The DEA would have the ability to mandate prescriber education, and the National Health Services Corps could be deployed to hard-hit areas of the country.
Now, Dr. Kolodny, you've spent time considering the role of pharmaceutical companies in the spreading of this epidemic. Is there a need for more policy focused in that direction on those companies?
We just learned last week that in 2015, 92 million Americans received a prescription for an opioid. We've been overexposing the U.S. population to these highly addictive drugs. Doctors are writing too many prescriptions for opioids, and the FDA hasn't done enough to stop pharmaceutical companies from promoting aggressive prescribing.
It's become part of the medical culture, and cultures are complicated things to shift.
It's part of the medical culture. It's part of the American culture to seek a pill for every ill. We do need much more cautious prescribing, but one of the reasons doctors are not prescribing cautiously is they're not weighing the risks versus benefits of opioids very well when they prescribe them. These are highly addictive drugs that don't work well if you take them every day on a long-term basis, yet they've become routinely prescribed for common problems like low back pain. And because we're writing so many prescriptions, our patients are becoming addicted, and we're also stocking people's homes with a highly addictive drug. And until we rein in the overprescribing, this epidemic will not end.
Andrew Kolodny is co-director of the Opioid Policy Research Collaborative at Brandeis. Dr. Kolodny, thank you.
Thank you for having me.
President Trump has promised a, quote, big, big free trade agreement with Britain once that country leaves the European Union, set for 2019. But the British cabinet is split over the issue. Some ministers believe the UK should clinch a deal with the US at any cost. But as Stephen Beard reports, others are more cautious. They fear that a deal could usher in some American farm produce currently banned in Europe that could undermine British food standards.
American beef treated with growth hormone. And American chickens washed with chlorine. The Brits reject them, mostly on animal welfare grounds. Nick Dearden is with campaign group Global Justice Now. He claims that washing dead chickens with chlorine to kill bacteria implies a lower standard of animal husbandry.
What it means is those chickens can be kept in less sanitary conditions while they're alive, and they can be slaughtered in less sanitary conditions.
And former head of Britain's Food Standards Agency, Lord Krebs, says there's a similar objection to American hormone-fed beef.
In this country, we're used to seeing beef cattle grazing outside in a sort of natural situation, whereas in the US, they're raised in intensive rearing pens and they're given hormones to make them grow faster.
More efficient, maybe, but probably less fun for the cattle. The US farm lobby dismisses this as protectionist and hypocritical. Is there really any difference between British chicken factory farming and the American version? The big fear, though, says Nick Dearden, is that a free trade deal will unleash a tidal wave of cheap American imports.
How on earth can you compete as a British farmer with some of the incredible mass-scale agriculture that takes place in the United States?
He and other critics fear that a free trade deal with the US could trigger a race to the bottom, with plummeting food prices dragging down animal welfare and even food quality. Tim Lang, a professor of food policy.
Britain in the European time has ratcheted up its standards. There's a Europeanisation of culinary culture, and we're going to see whether it becomes a McDonaldisation of culture.
Britain's farm minister says we will not dilute our standards in pursuit of any trade deal, but the trade minister has been less emphatic. He said a decision on this issue is a long way off. In London, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
And the Snapchat company's having a bad day. Its stock is down almost 13% now after it reported quarterly losses that were bigger than expected and growth in users slowing. Snap's CEO would rather investors pay more attention to all the money advertisers are spending for the users he does have. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.